There's an expression that we use this time of the year. It goes something like this, that the Feast of Tabernacles pictures something. I believe that the word pictures or picture has been used about as long as I can remember in observing the holy days, all of them, but in particular, this seven-day festival, which is climaxed or closed out by the last great day. So we have 8 days of being together. I've heard ministers get up year after year, and I'm sure it will happen this year, and it's fine, and it is appropriate, and it should be that way. Ministers will say the Feast of Tabernacles pictures a number of things. If I were to just leave that statement blank to you and ask you that and say, okay, go along with me now. The Feast of Tabernacles pictures the, what would you fill it in with?
You fill it in with all sorts of thoughts and ideas, don't you? Some of you, most of you would say, how many of you would say the kingdom of God? Quite a few would say it pictures, we would say the coming kingdom of God. How many of you would agree with this, that the Feast of Tabernacles pictures the millennial reign of Jesus Christ on earth? Some of you would probably say that. How many of you would say that the Feast of Tabernacles pictures Christ tabernacling with man? How many of us would come to that? Okay, so it's interesting, as I say, the Feast of Tabernacles pictures this, that, and the other thing, that in this audience, there are different answers to what it pictures among all of us. We don't all see the exact same thing. And I think that's a little bit interesting, because as we look at the Scripture, from the Old Testament to the New Testament, God provides us pictures to help us understand His words and thoughts. By pictures, I mean it's the Holy Word of God. It's His inspired Word. If I were to say, just to illustrate for a moment, a picture, and I say, David and Goliath, what do you see? You have a visual image of David and Goliath. If I say, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, what do you think of? You might think of a fiery furnace. If I say just a single name like Joseph, there's any number of things that you might think about, but a lot of you would think about Joseph in Egypt. You might think about when he was betrayed by his brothers. You might think about when he escaped sin. There's any number of images that would come to mind. It is also that way in our lives. That is, if we look back through the wake of our lives, those days and years behind us, all of us have collected a variety of pictures. What they are has, to a great degree, influenced who we marry, our jobs, who we have become. And as we go through this life, we leave pictures in other people's lives, and they are always leaving them in ours. Whether you have children, if you do have children, they are leaving them in yours, and you are leaving them in theirs. Pictures are rather interesting. I was going to bring up an album, and I thought, well, I don't need to do that today. Our family's pretty big on pictures. We have album after album after album. And honestly, we have drawers full of pictures. You know, there's so many pictures, we haven't gotten them into albums yet. Do you have that problem at home? And inside those drawers are pictures that are black and white, Polaroids, Instamatics, color, some that are almost faded because they've been in there for such a long, long time, or when we took the picture, we didn't have the right light exposure. It was just the wrong time of day. We have handled the picture so much that the image has actually begun to look a little bit blemished. All sorts of reasons why the picture isn't sharp. Nonetheless, those pictures represent an aspect of our lives, even as your pictures represent a part of your life. The power of a picture is undeniable. Let me just for a moment say, what do you think about if I say Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire? If you've read the newspapers, and there's a picture of these two men in there, just a picture. What do you think if I just say those two, Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire, which I just heard on the news coming in, that Sammy Sosa raised the bar, as it was said last night, for 45 minutes because he hit one home run, and then Mark McGuire comes up and he hits one, and so now it's tight again. That's a pretty nice picture, isn't it? And if I were to ask all of you in this audience, if you could print the end to that story, what would it be? Because I think they all have two or three more games left. I don't know for sure, but two or three more games to play it out. You give me the ending of the picture. What would you like to see as a close? How would you like to see it end? I'll tell you how I'd like to see it end. Tied. That's how I'd really like to see it end, because these two gentlemen, this little picture that I have of them, causes my human spirit to celebrate the good things about men and women. Even the aspects of the few who have been so kind as to return the ball that might be worth $1 million. Think about that for a moment. If you had been up there in the ball field, and you had been that young man who had caught Mark McGuire's 62nd, or was it his 63rd, 62nd home run, and the ball was priced at approximately $1 million, would you have given it back? Would you? That's a tough question to answer, isn't it? You know, it's easy for me to answer that when I don't have the ball. You know, I don't have the ball, so I know my answer. You bet I'd give it back. I wouldn't even hesitate. But what if you've got the ball? It's worth $1 million. I'd hope that we would stay true to our commitment that we had if we didn't have it. But I like the picture. That's the point I'm trying to make. When I say these two men, I picture that. Now, on the other hand, I can take you to another extreme. What if I say Flight 111, Nova Scotia? Then I begin to see pictures, images of loved ones standing on the rocky mountainsides, not close to the seashore, mourning their loved ones. And then I see the wreckage that has been accumulated out of the bottom of that ocean over 100 feet down. So pictures have a way of doing that, don't they? They have a way of reaching us. And normally, it can induce in us feelings and emotions. It can make us angry. It can make us sad. It can make us happy. It can cause celebration. It can cause us to change. I'd like to share a story which I couldn't help but notice. The other day I was flying on an aircraft. It was a pretty good size aircraft, and it was a long enough flight that they decided to show an in-flight movie, which is a lot of fun. But I was involved in other things, so I didn't put on the headset. But I'd like to share with you what happened, and I observed this. And I like to observe people, and I carry around a little notebook, not quite this large, but I take notes on people. That's one of the things which I like to do when I'm traveling. So this is a result of that. This is something that I observed. The power of a picture. In front, let me explain it this way. When I walked in on the aircraft, the section that I was in had three seats. All right. And there was an aisle, and then there were three seats over here. All right. So I got in my chair, and I sat down first of all, and there were two seats empty beside me. So I was sitting there, and I didn't put my belt on because I figured somebody would come in there. And that's exactly what happened. It wasn't too much longer. I had to wait. Somebody came, and it was a husband and wife, and I could tell that they were not happy with each other. Because there was a lot of this going on. I mean, there was a lot of just biting at each other and just talking, and it was sharp. And she sat against the window, and he sat next to me, and he wasn't a real small person, which is okay, but she just wouldn't let it go. She didn't want to sit next to the window. She didn't like the fact that he didn't put her top, she had a blouse top or a little jacket that she wanted to put in the overhead bin. She didn't have a pillow. And I mean, from the moment she sat down, she just griped and griped and griped and complained. And I was sitting this close, and I could pretty much hear what was going on. I thought about taking my notebook and doing this, but I didn't. I just sort of listened, and I turned away, and I sort of read my book like this. And finally, he kept trying, well, I'll do this, sweetheart, and all, you know, it was very, very gracious. And they were very unhappy. I mean, she didn't like the fact that she was on the window, as I said, and he was in the middle. And he offered then to go ahead and change it. She said, no. He was just sort of snippety about it. So as the plane started to take off, which is what a lot of travelers do, I noticed that directly behind us was an empty seat. So guess what I did? I did what I thought was a courteous thing. I said to the fellow next to me, I said, listen, I said, I'll move to the back and give you all a little bit more room. Really what I was doing is I was getting out of that fight. So I went right in the back and I sat in the front row, and now I can watch them. They're right in front of me, see? So what do you think they did? She stayed over there, and he got up and moved into my nice warm seat. And there's an empty seat in the middle of it, all right? So that's the setup here. We got the two of them in front of me, a couple over here directly across from them, and a couple directly across from me. Now this is what I wanted to get to They were showing as the movie, as we traveled, this movie called City of Angels. Have any of you seen that movie, City of Angels? It stars Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan, just to sort of identify it with you for you a little bit. And at the end of the movie, there is a very emotional section of footage. I won't, those of you who have not seen it, I won't tell you about it. But it's very emotional. You just tend to get caught up in it. The power of a picture. And I don't just mean a movie picture. I mean just what's going on. I didn't have a headset on, so I was just looking at the picture without any kind of audio capability. So I watched these people around me, especially in the emotional section. There was a young man over to my right who appeared to be about 16 to 17 years of age, a big boy. And all of a sudden, I observed him. He took his pillow, a pillow, and brought it up to his face, and he began to sob. I mean, first of all, I thought something was really wrong, because I didn't expect it. As I said, I was looking down and I was busy. And all of a sudden, I could hear him audibly just sobbing. And I thought it was really touching that his mother did what mothers do, even though the boy was a big old boy. She reached over and grabbed her son in her arm and stroked his hair and rubbed his head, and he just sobbed. And then I thought, well, what? And I looked at the movie and I saw it was during that very emotional part of the movie. Power of a picture. It emotionally touched them. What do you think happened to the couple in front of me as they were viewing the movie, because they had their headsets on too? Something rather interesting happened. He moved over beside her, and she took her blanket, because it's cold, and shared it, the two of them together, and they snuggled the rest of the flight. Just because of this movie. The couple next to me, as soon as the movie was over, husband and wife, and there was another person over against the window, as soon as the movie was over, she took her headset off. He did not have a headset on, and she reached over and gave her husband a kiss. Just a movie. Just a picture. And for some reason, that caught my attention, because it made me realize just how powerful pictures are. Not just moving pictures, but the pictures of life and God's will and what God has in store for us. Honestly, let's be frank about it. Some of us, if we were to go back into our past, we have torn pictures. If we talk about our church history, some of the imagery at one time, which was so bright and so meaningful, is now not what it once was. And maybe the picture is blemished, maybe the picture is torn. I think about it in regard to the Feast of Tabernacles. Years ago, the picture I have of the Feast of Tabernacles, which is a fond memory, it really is, it left a little bit to be desired, because we didn't have any money, but that didn't keep us from going, because we were supposed to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And I remember that we were on a beach over in Jekyll Island. We didn't even have a room to stay in. We just didn't have the money. And as I recall, a hurricane had come through there as well and pretty much ruined everything. And so we ended up sleeping on the beach. That's where we spent the Feast of Tabernacles, one or two nights. I don't really remember now to be sure. But I do remember sleeping on the beach, laying on a picnic table that was made out of concrete. And that was my bed. What a picture of an early feast. That picture isn't as ideal as it could have been, so maybe it's a little bit blemished, but over the years, I've been able to put that picture in perspective, because a little physical lack of comforts that I experienced, really, that's not what the feast is all about. If I look at it in perspective of what the feast really means, that picture can be reworked a little bit. All of you have pictures that represent your life. Let me tell you something. The heart remembers those words, those moments of sadness, those occasions of great celebration. And it's sort of like the heart is a cardboard box. The reason I say that, we have boxes that we put our pictures into, and we accumulate them over life, don't we? As I drop specifically now to the Feast of Tabernacles, I want you to think about what the Feast of Tabernacles pictures for you and pictures for your family. There's a story of a young rabbi who was eager to gain the approval of the small community in which he lived. He was convinced that he was wise and that he was worthy of their respect, but for some reason he had not been able to convince the villagers that that was true. So as a result, he was leaning toward a little bit of bitterness and spite. He wanted them to approve him. They did not. So one day he decided to seize upon an opportunity for vengeance. When the old, wise, and respected rabbi made his journey through the small community, he, the younger man, decided to devise a test. The test was real simple. He was going to take a very small bird, place it into the palm of his hand, and ask the old man a question. The question was whether or not this bird is alive or dead. Now, if the rabbi said that the bird was alive, he could very easily take this small little bird and crush it in his hand, and he'd open his hand and it would be dead, disproving the rabbi. So, if the rabbi said dead, then he could open up his hand and that small little bird would do what? It would fly away. Surely he thought that this test would provide him the recognition that he was seeking and that he thought he deserved. Well, sure enough, the old rabbi came through one day and he got this little bird in his hand. He went up to the old rabbi. The younger one said, "Rabbi, we all know that you are wise, but can you answer this? Is the bird in my hand dead or alive?" And with an appearance of kindness, the old rabbi, the older man, looked at the younger rabbi, and he said this. He said, "It is up to you, my friend. It is up to you." The reason why that's important is the pictures that we associate with the Feast of Tabernacles are the very same as well. What we think about the feast, the support that we give it, the story that it tells, is pretty much up to us, isn't it? Because of the pictures that we have. So I'm going to ask you today, what are you doing about the pictures that you have in your hands? And I want to tie this in with the picture of what the Feast of Tabernacles is all about. It is important for us to remember that God tells us to remember certain things. He tells us through Moses, that we are to remember his laws. We are also, as David tells us, the psalmist, he says that we are to remember God's marvelous works and his wonders. Solomon tells us that we are to remember the Creator in the days of our youth. We are then told by the Apostle Paul to remember the Lord in the way in which he brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. There is something to remember about this, that if you allow a long lapse in your memory, there is a very great potential danger therein. Don't turn there because it's not central to what I have to say today. It's just something I want you to think about. Judges chapter 3 and verse 7 says, "And the sons of Israel did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord and forgot the Lord their God, and they serve false gods." That's the danger in not remembering. You forget. Pictures allow us not to forget. Have you ever picked up one of those old photos out of the drawer that you haven't looked at in a long time, and you'll think right off the bat, you'll remember, won't you? That's something that I forgot. I remember. What is it then that we can remember and think about as the picture of the Feast of Tabernacles? I guess it depends on how many years you've been doing it, but there is a message behind the feast, and I'd like to talk about that to you with right now. A picture, there are several things that you can do with a picture. Follow me on this. One of the things that you can do with a picture is real simple. You can take a picture and you can restore it. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is that a lot of us have blemished pictures about the feast and the past. And I'm not asking you to deny the truth and the reality about everything that happened, but sometimes we focus on the blemish rather than seeing the good of the whole thing. I remember years ago, just to give you a very simple illustration of this, I remember a fellow who was a, a minister in the church. I may have told you this story before, but it comes to mind as I relate this to you. He was going to the Feast of Tabernacles, and he was on his way, he was on his journey, and this is the picture I have when I think of him. His first name was Al. And he and his wife got to the motel room, not at the feast, but on the way to the feast, they peeled back the sheets, and there were millions, as he said, millions of little tiny roaches in his bed. Because I guess the roaches had got in there and had little baby roaches, and little baby roaches were everywhere. What a memory. But you know what? That's not the picture of the feast. That's just some little blemish, some little minor thing along the way at the feast. And it really doesn't add up, does it, to what the feast is all about. And we were able to laugh about that a little bit later on. We can fill in the information that makes the photograph more meaningful if we have the broad perspective of what life, or the feast in this case, was all about. If I may illustrate that to you, and you don't have to turn there because I know you're very familiar with these stories. When I ask you about the story of Joseph and his brothers, what do you picture? I picture betrayal, jealousy, potential murder. I picture famine. I picture family controversy. That's some of the picture that comes to mind. And yet, ironically, I do want you to see this part. I want you to see what Joseph said about that picture. Because you see, it was blemished, it was tarnished, it was torn, it was undeveloped, and he puts it into perspective. If you'll turn with me to Genesis chapter 50, just to illustrate this point to you, Genesis 50 verse 19. And there's another lesson in here because this applies to the pictures of our life as we go along. And whether you're taking instamatics or whether you're taking color or who knows what kind of pictures you're taking, there's a lesson to be learned here. Genesis 50, verse 19. Joseph said unto them, "Don't fear, for I am in the place of God. But as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore, don't you fear, I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them, and he spoke kindly unto them. Those few verses puts into perspective the pictures that I would have had if I had been Joseph. Joseph says, "Aha, I understand now. All of that was necessary so that I could be here to save you, my brothers." There's no anger here. There's no bitterness here. There's no resentment here. There's just a restoration of the picture, if I may put it in that language, as I carry out this analogy. What I mean to bring to you by this is, as we get ready to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, let's choose to bring understanding to the purpose and the meaning of the Feast of Tabernacles. I repeat that. Let's choose to bring understanding and purpose to the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, let me tell you something else that we can do with the picture. And it's going to happen. I'm going to ask all of you to do this at the feast this year. Everyone listening to me today, please do this. There's another process in picture, in dealing with pictures, that is very important. And it's caused some controversy. It's called tinting, retinting of pictures. There was a movie that I saw some time ago. I don't even remember when it came out. It's sort of a new picture. And I saw this crystal clear. And the reason why I bring this out is because retinting an old picture gives what to the picture? It gives life to that picture. Did any of you see Schindler's List? Okay. Do you remember in Schindler's List what happened? It was basically a black and white movie, right? But there was one little girl who every time you saw her, she was in red. Do you remember that? So here's the black and white movie, but every time you saw the little girl, she was red. What did that do to you and to me? It drew me to her. Number one, I saw her. I picked her out immediately because, frankly, if she hadn't have been tinted and colored, I would have lost her in the crowd. She would have been unlike anyone else. But because she was tinted, I was able to see her. Do you remember the times that she was in the movie? They were very, very serious times.
She was walking along. She was hiding for her life. She was torn away from her mother. And at the very end of the movie, you saw her on a little bit of a... Well, it was, I guess they were just hauling. I don't want to be too graphic about it, but they were hauling away all these dead bodies. And you saw her little body as a part of that group that had been murdered. And it just tore you up. That's what that tenting did. I want to ask you all, in light of that, this year, to remember something that's supposed to happen at the Feast of Tabernacles. And this may not be the appropriate way to say this, but I hope you understand what I'm going to say. Would you give life to Jesus Christ at this feast? Because you see, you can lose sight of Him in the group, in the people, in the place, in the hurricane, in all the problems and all the trauma and all the upset and all the rain on the roof and all of that. But don't let that occur. Because the Feast of Tabernacles is meant to give life to the very message of Jesus Christ. He's the very focus of what we're supposed to follow during these holy days, especially the feast, when we talk about what Jesus Christ does. We only did get glimpses of that little girl in that terribly sobering movie, Schindler's List. We have a chance every single day of the feast to really focus in on Jesus and get more than just a glimpse, but to see Him as the very imagery and the very life of that picture, the Feast of Tabernacles. There's another thing that we can do, and I think this happens every year at the feast, and this is one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to going to the feast this year. What does the Feast of Tabernacles picture? It pictures all the things that we already said. But every single year that I go to the feast, pretty much the same kind of messages, but I get to put a new frame on it. If any of you have pictures, let me tell you what happens when you put a new frame on a picture. There are a couple things that happen. You can choose a matting. Depending upon the color of the matting that you put on the picture, it makes the same picture, but it makes it look completely different. Then you can take a frame and put a new frame around the matting. Same picture, and now it looks totally different. And I assure you that what's going to happen this year at the Feast of Tabernacles is the ministry of the church are going to do their very best to put a new frame around the Feast of Tabernacles. Same picture. Jesus Christ will be there. He will be the focus in the very life of what we do. And it is the responsibility of the ministry to put a new frame around it for you. And maybe in the fact that they do or do not, you can put one around it yourself. What a difference a frame makes, what a difference a feast makes. There's one other final thing to do, and that is, do you have any pictures at home that are really important to you? What do you do with them? Just discard them and put them away where nobody sees them, or what do you do with them? You save them up. Or if they're really important to you, you put them on display. It doesn't make sense to take a picture that you have restored, that you have retinted, that you have reframed, and lay it aside, does it? That doesn't make any sense at all. No, you place it somewhere where it can be remembered. That's one of the things about the Feast of Tabernacles and what it pictures. It gives us something to remember. There's one fascinating little thing about pictures that happens with the Feast of Tabernacles as well. Pictures are passed on from generation to generation, aren't they? Don't you have pictures of your grandmother, your grandfather that was passed along? They're now deceased, but guess what? You've got a picture of them, and all of a sudden there's this imagery, this focus. All right, the same thing happens with the Feast of Tabernacles. You have an opportunity to go there, to restore it, to tent it, to reframe it, and display it. And it is passed along from generation to generation. If you will, I want you to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I only have a couple of verses I want you to see today. And this is one of them. It's over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Begin reading in verse 6. I mentioned to you earlier the children of Israel were reminded to remember what happened to them in the wilderness. They were never to forget that picture of what God did with their forefathers. And yet, we are told today to remember that. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 6. Now these things, what? Well, you can read about those things. It's the children of Israel wandering in the wilderness. He says, these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. Neither be you idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur you, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. See, those are the things we're supposed to remember. We have a picture, but let's remember. Let's pass on. Let's not forget. Let's give it its rightful place on the mantle. All these things happen to them for examples. And they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. So the pictures are back there. It's passed on from generation to generation to generation, and we're not supposed to forget. So we should display those pictures to remind us of how God works in our lives. The Feast of Tabernacles is a way in which God works in our lives as well. It's a way of honoring Him. It's a way of honoring Him with our life. The Bible is a lot of things. It is the very key to life itself. I'm not taking away from the Holy Spirit and the living of Jesus Christ in us, but it shows us how to live life. It's an album of pictures. Do this, don't do that. Do you remember that? Well, don't forget this. There's also a frame I want you to see with me. It's over in Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14. We're going to see over in verse 16, I believe. Just one little frame, one little picture. And not that it makes a whole lot of difference, but I'll show you. I've got that one tinted in my Bible. I've got it actually colored in red because I don't want to miss what this verse says. It shall come to pass that every one that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. There it is. One little frame, one little picture. Verses 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21 give us quite a follow-up to that frame. But I just wanted you to see verse 16. Go up and keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, over here in John chapter 7. John chapter 7, beginning of verse 1. Chapter 7 and verse 1. After these things, Jesus walked into Galilee, he would not walk into Jewry because the Jews sought to kill him. Now, the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand. His brethren therefore said to him, depart here and go into Judea, that your disciples also may see the works that you do. For there is no man that does anything in secret, and he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world. For neither did his brethren believe in him. Now verse 6 and 7. Then Jesus said to them, my time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but me it hates, because I testify of it that the works thereof are evil. Verse 8. There's a frame. Go ye up unto the feast. He says, I don't go up yet, for my time is not yet full come. But he did come, as you read in verses 14 and thereafter. That's the message that he gave during the feast. Go you up unto the feast. Well, it's time for us to go too. It's time for us to pack up, take our families, and make the journey. It's quite a journey. It's pretty much what you make out of it to a great degree. You either open your hand and the bird is dead or alive. It's either good or bad. A lot of it depends on just your focus and your attitude and being able to keep the meaning of the feast in perspective as to the overall reasons that we are doing it. I hope that you have a great feast. I hope that all of you today in this audience, those who might be listening on the tape program, that you're very safe as you travel there, but that we don't lose focus of what the feast is all about.
What does the Feast of Tabernacles picture? It pictures a lot of things. Go there, keep your focus on Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Listen to the ministry as they speak, and the brethren that you associate with as the feast is reframed. And then you'll be able to come back from the feast and place that meaningful picture, maybe not on the mantle of your home, but in the mantle of your life where everybody can see it. So it's time to go to the feast, something to look forward to. Be sure to do one thing, though, along the way and on your way back. Take a lot of pictures.